Open Senate Revenue Committee for Monday, February 2nd, or not February 2nd, February 7th.
Every day seems like February 2nd.
That's right. There's a movie that had that theme to it. That's right. Welcome, Senator Metzger. So it's tax court day again, and we have Judge Breithaupt, and with him,
Magistrate Tanner.
That is right. So, good morning. Thank you for joining us again. I think we'll go, if we could, with Senate Bill 270 first and work our way backwards, just because Senator Brzezinski had some questions on Senate Bill 267, which we'd heard previously, and so I'll give him a chance to get here, if that works for everyone. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 270.
Paul. Mr. Chair, you have a couple of things for Senate Bill 270. First, just an outline of our staff measure summary. And then the other item there is from Judge Breithaupt. It has an outline of the bill that he sent to the office, and that's material he'll go through.
Great. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I am Henry Breithaupt, the judge of the Oregon Tax Court. With me today is the presiding magistrate of the court, the Honorable Jill Tanner. We're happy to be here again to talk with you about hopefully a couple of bills that the court was interested in. This bill, Senate Bill 270, deals with and really, we really are following on in part some of our discussion from before. Since 1997, the tax court has operated with two divisions, a regular division in which I am the judge, and then a magistrate division in which there are currently five magistrates, and to which the first appeal by a taxpayer, or in some cases county, but typically taxpayer, that's the first place the appeal goes. The magistrate division was created by the legislature with a, I think, very clear charter to be, if you will, user-friendly, dispute resolution-oriented, and it has, I think, very successfully functioned in that regard. Over the 7 years of its existence, we have noted one thing that this bill addresses. First of all, since 1997, the magistrate division has permitted a fairly wide group of people to represent taxpayers. In other words, unlike the regular division where a person must show up either for themselves, pro se, or with an attorney, the magistrate division statute as it currently exists permits representation by, for example, a certified public accountant, a licensed tax return preparer, a officer of a company generally familiar with the tax matters of the company. The spirit of the statute currently is broad representation. What we have found, and Magistrate Tanner can chime in here when I'm done with the brief introduction and perhaps answer questions, is that in some instances there is more flexibility needed. And a classic example of that would be an older taxpayer, not impaired from the point of view of legal capacity, but simply someone who has a hard time understanding even basic procedures of appeals and courts and law. On the telephone call or in the hearing, that older taxpayer would like to have a son or a daughter participate. Now, assume that the son or the daughter is not a certified public accountant, licensed tax return preparer, real estate broker. We run into the problem of, can the son or daughter really appear as a representative and help that parent? Now, the natural human desire, of course, is to say, of course. But the statute, as it currently exists, presents some difficulty there. So the proposal that's been made is to permit representation by the various folks that have been traditionally authorized, as well as other representatives as may be authorized under rules to be adopted by the court. And now that does grant the court a bit of a, I won't say a blank check. It grants it some authority that isn't specifically described, but the spirit of the proposal is to permit the court to adopt rules that would, even on a case-by-case basis, permit a magistrate to say, all right, Mr. Jones has some limitations in his understanding of this. His son is here. The son appears to be knowledgeable. They appear to be operating in concert. For this purpose, the son can appear and make the statements and bring information, correspond with the court, for example, and correspond with the people from the Department of Revenue. So the proposal is to liberalize that a little bit, subject to the discretion of the magistrates.
Thank you.
And I'm going to pass the gavel because I'm coughing. Senator Starr, if you could. Thank you.
Yes, I. Questions from the committee. Seems to be a reasonable extension of the powers to the magistrate. This senator's concern. I don't have any questions in that regard.
Senator Starr is with it. I'm with it. So mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem with it. Sounds straightforward to me.
Well, if there's general agreement here, I think we just move on to close the public hearing and open the work session on Senate Bill 270. I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate Bill 267 be moved to the floor of the mayor. 270, excuse me, be moved to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Metzger has moved that Senate Bill 270 be moved to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Any comments, discussion? Any opposition? Hearing none, so ordered. Carrier, volunteer?
I'll take it.
Senator Prozanski has volunteered to carry the bill. Where do we go from this one? We go to Senate Bill 269. We're going to go in reverse order this morning. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 269.
Mr. Chair, 269 is the fourth and I believe the last in our series of tax court bills. 267 you had heard earlier last week, and so that's back for work session today. This, again, is an adjustment. Essentially what it does is allow or eliminate the statutory requirement for filing certified copies. So that's the intent is to bring that into conformity with current practice. Again, you have a summary prepared by Judge Breithoff in your material.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This again is a bill, and I am Henry Breithaupt, the judge of the Oregon Tax Court, a bill that designed to do some housekeeping, if you will, and to have the statutes conform with what day-to-day most often occurs. Over the existence of the tax court, there had developed a statute which said that complaints needed to be filed an original and a certified copy. Again, when the court was just the Oregon Tax Court without a magistrate division and people appeared primarily through lawyers, statutory requirements to file an original and one certified copy didn't seem to present much problem because lawyers were used to that certified copy requirement. We now have individual citizens coming, representing themselves in many cases, and coming first to the magistrate division. And I will just tell you that most citizens do not send an original and one certified copy. They send an original, they send a fee check, and they believe they've done what they need to do. And frankly, so do we. The statute, though, technically requires that certified copy, and in really a cleanup effort to make sure that we're not out of step with the statute, this bill simply eliminates the need for the certified copy. We feel that our staff is perfectly capable of making a copy that is accurate, true, complete, and send it on to the department. So we urge you to pass this bill.
Thank you. Any discussion? Any question.
I'd hope the tax court would be able to handle this extra workload without having to meet another FTE.
I can assure you that there is no measurable fiscal impact from this proposal.
We could send it down to Ways and Means and trouble them with that.
And I wish to say I want to thank the committee and the legislature for addressing these. They seem like small points, and in many ways they are, but to have your statutes comport with the actual practice just eliminates the kind of question that sometimes can come up. So,
appreciate that. No further questions?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Prozanski.
If we act on this, we may be accused of doing good government.
Experience.
And I don't know if we can be accused of having good government in the legislature, but I'm going to go with it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Prozanski, the only thing I would warn, of course, is the old rule that no good deed goes unpunished.
No further comments or questions. We're going to close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 269.
Chair, I move Senate Bill 269 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Metzger has moved Senate Bill 269 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any opposition? Hearing none, so ordered. Carrier. Senator Metzger will carry Senate Bill 269. And we will return to close that work session on 269, open a public hearing on Senate Bill 267.
Chair, can I introduce this bill?
Please.
Okay. Senate Bill 267 aims to reinstate for the tax court the right to value property outside the pleading based on the evidence presented in court. Judge Redhout has submitted some additional evidence just to give you, Senator Prozanski, to give you some background on material, and I think that attachment 2 really clarifies that the original, you know, statute did give the tax court this authority. There were very slight changes in wording which confused me when I saw it the first time, but I think clearly there is just a reinstatement here of existing, of current.
Thank you. Judge Breithaupt.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we were happy to submit the additional information that really fleshes out where the law had been for many years and what we believe happened, more than believe, what happened to it in the interim. And as your staff person has correctly stated, the bill that we have put before you simply puts us back in the position that the court was in prior to 1995. And in particular, puts it back into a statutory position that it occupied from 1977 until 1995. The other attachment that we have given you is the bill by which that position was changed, and I believe you can see that is from that is attachment 3, Oregon Laws 1995. I believe you can see why we assume that the execution of this, the life of this statute ended in a repeal section, which produced a result that I don't think anyone really intended. It's a cleanup repealer section, and it to some extent threw the baby out with the bathwater. But so what we are proposing is to cure that act by putting the court back in the position it occupied for approximately 20 years, between 77 and 97. I'd be glad to answer any questions if you have them.
Questions?
Thanks.
Senator Deggert?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will try to get this out. So if you could refresh us, Judge, we had this bill before us about 10 days ago, and the issue was and correct me if I'm wrong, the ability to go outside the parameters. And we asked you to bring back some information, and if you could just refresh the committee in terms of what you found per the questions that we had a week and a half ago.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, Senator Decker. It occurs to me I may have Mr. Vice Chairman, Mr. Chairman.
Who's on first?
What we discussed approximately 10 days ago was what occurs in the courtroom, and that is that one party, let's say the taxpayer, pleads a value of $200. The Department of Revenue or a county pleads a value of $300. As the trial proceeds, the actual witnesses, the actual appraisers, might in fact submit evidence on behalf of the department that shows that the value is $350. Alternatively, the evidence submitted by the taxpayer, even though the taxpayer pled $200, claimed $200, their witness on the stand could say, you know, the more I've worked on this case, the more I realize the value of this property is only $150. So now the question is the court limited to that band that the parties pled between $200 and $300, or can the court at that point find either a lower value or a higher value? And prior to 1995, that authority existed for the court to go outside the pleadings. So assuming there was evidence, the court can't just go outside the pleadings and find a value supported by the evidence. In 1995, that statutory authority was repealed, we believe, in just an oversight. And this would put the court back in that position of being able to move outside the pleadings where appropriate. Now, the current practice of the court is it has attempted through speeches and through some publications to, in a sense, educate the bar, at least, that if you have pled a value and your proof is beyond that, you may wish to file a motion to amend your pleadings. And the court has indicated that it would be liberal in its approach to granting such motions. What this bill will do is really make the motions unnecessary and put us back to the position where if your witnesses prove a higher or lower value than what you pled, then you can ask for that relief. And I would stress, by the way, one other point, given I think what some of the concerns expressed. What we have done is simply to take the language that sat in the Oregon Revised Statutes for 20 years, and we have put it back. We have made no change to it, other than, I believe, as your staff person mentioned, that one noun had changed. Reference now is to real market value, not true cash value. But other than that, we have simply put back in the module that had fallen out in 1995.
Thank you. Further questions? Judge Tanner?
Oh, yes, thank you. Please, go ahead.
Thank you very much. I am Jill Tanner, the presiding magistrate of the Oregon Tax Court. And one other comment that I just wanted to add, in the testimony that we had provided to you, there is a provision in the income tax side of the code which allows the court to determine the value again or the correct assessment. And we do this with the parties. Of course, the evidence has to be there, and we want to emphasize that to be able to do that, to make the determination. But we think that again reinforces the idea that we believe it was an oversight or an error when it was removed, because the income tax provision remains the same, remained throughout this period of time in which the property tax provision had been removed. So, thank you.
Any further questions? Well, thank you very much. We have one further witness, Ginny Lang, representing Quest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jenny Lang. I represent Quest Communications, and I'm here to talk a little bit about Senate Bill 267. I apologize for not having been present at the first hearing. My tax people had only a chance to look at this after that first hearing, so I am sorry if I'm slowing things up, but we do have a few comments on this. What I'm having passed out to you is a statement of support for an amendment to this bill and a copy of the proposed amendment. What we're concerned about with this is that Senate Bill 267, as originally proposed, would permit the tax court to determine values based on evidence presented without regard to the values that are pleaded in the case. What we think is that it could have the effect of perpetuating what is an unusual feature for our tax lawyers to run into in states, and that is the ability of the taxing authority to seek an increase in the value assessment, even though it is the taxpayer who has exercised the right to appeal an assessment that they believe is already too high. So what our amendment would do is simply say that the tax court may not increase the value to any amount higher than the value from which the taxpayer appealed. So that, as Judge Breithaupt mentioned, it would preserve the requirement that if either of the parties wishes to change things, that they would have to file a motion rather than just have the court be able to determine based on the evidence presented in the case a higher or a lower assessment.
Questions?
Starting down there.
Senator Metzger.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Ms. Lang, I mean, I understand what you're saying there, but just help me with this a little bit, because someone appeals. They're saying that the valuation has been unfairly set. So now you're opening, essentially, when you do that, you're going to court to open the record. So why then should the record be capped when you've already, you know, I mean, I understand, but isn't that part of the risk any time you go to court when you say, you know, this valuation is unfair and we're asking the court to provide remedy, but we want to limit the court on one half of this remedy. I mean, wouldn't it be that part of the risk that you take when you come to the court to say that a valuation for whatever reason has been unfairly set and we want to reopen the case? And by volunteering to reopen the case, then wouldn't it be fair to have all the evidence laid out on and let the chips fall wherever they might lie under that situation?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzger, we would agree that all of the evidence should be available, but in order for there to be a judgment that is different from what has been put forth in the pleadings, that if someone wanted to make a change based on information that they gathered or research that was done during the case, that they would have to make a motion to change their pleadings rather than just leave it up to the court to determine based on evidence presented. So that regardless of whether it was the taxpayer in Judge Breithaupt's example who determined that maybe the value should be even lower than what they thought, or conversely that the department should find that it should be even higher, that either party would still have to file a motion.
Noodle that a little bit.
Further questions?
For now.
Senator Thacker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bear with me, Ms. Lang, if I... So the way I understand it is the amendment would basically lock in the ceiling but not give the floor, I guess, the latitude that the court asked for in terms of ability to go down in terms of the valuation. And to me, and it's, I guess it's a similar question to Senator Metzger's, is why would, if we're going to give them latitude to go down on the assessment, why wouldn't we just give them that latitude to exceed the parameters and go up based on the evidence that they hear in the court proceedings?
Mr. Chairman, From our standpoint, the issue is whether the party who is filing for the appeal should be allowed to be overridden by the court just based on the evidence presented rather than going through a more I would say perhaps disciplined or organized process where pleadings were filed and discussions could be held. I might also say that that our company would be more than happy to have conversations with the department on this amendment and whether there are some things that we could do to make this palatable for them and for us. We have just gone through a fairly rigorous situation of our own on this very point, and I think we're probably a little more sensitive about what the court is allowed to do on assessed valuations without the party, us, and the department involved in the discussion.
Senator Perlusansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Lang, I'm really having a hard time, let's say, conceptually understanding why we would go with this amendment. And the reasons, I think, have been kind of demonstrated. But, I mean, basically, why shouldn't we allow the court, upon its own motion, to make amendments to the pleadings if the evidence is, one, borne out that that's what it should be? And, two, I understand from the perspective, it seems like we want to maintain what I would call this extra step and require the petitioner to actually have to make the motion so then it can actually be vetted through this process and then a determination or a ruling from the court. But it seems to me that you can still have the vetting based on even if the court on its own moved to change the pleadings based on the evidence that's heard, there could still be, I think there already would have been, a discussion as to what is the value of that property. Is it up or down? And the only thing I can come up with is that, and I'm going to use your company as an example, if Quest decided to appeal a valuation and it thought it should be less than what has been stated in the pleadings, is that right? And if the court found from the evidence that the value of the property is actually greater, what I'm hearing is that unless Quest chose to file a motion to raise the value, the court, even though it has made a determination through the evidence that the value of that property is greater, would be prohibited. And so then you basically have to shift it back to, I guess, the taxing authority to re-litigate or reassess to set the new value. That's, I'm trying to get that connection. That's all I'm coming up with, is that some way of protecting, as I think what Chair Deckard was saying, so long as it's going to be in our favor and it's going to be less, then the court should be able to do it. But the chips fall in such a way that the value seems to be even greater, then we're not going to allow that to be the determination or the level of determination. We're going to put that back to the taxing authority for them to start at ground zero.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Prozanski, I think that's exactly right.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Mr. Chair, what's your pleasure?
If we could hear from, and Jenny, maybe if you could, if you're available just to stay, if we could just hear from the tax court, Mr. Chair, and maybe for the department, and just if they have any initial response, if they've seen this amendment. I have not. And maybe Judge Breithoff or Judge Tanner.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Phillips with the Department of Revenue. I see the point that Ms. Lang is making. If I were the court, or if I were the person before the court and was charged with theft, and the court found me guilty of first-degree murder, I would think, wait a minute here. I want to go back to the pleadings and maybe limit, you know, finding outside that pleading. Be very, very afraid of that result. But I think what we have here is a situation where the judge, and the purpose of the bill is to create an efficiency in the system to save time with filing amended pleadings. I think that was the core purpose of the bill, and so I'm not sure. I don't think it would harm the department for the amendment to pass, but it would only allow the efficiency to work one direction, in which case the judge then, as he indicated, would probably allow an amendment, and then we would just proceed with the case. So I'm not so sure this would be a problem, although I don't understand the purpose of it. The goal, I think, and the statute requires property to be valued at 100% of its real market value. So that's what we're after. And if we can get there, then I think that'll work. I'm not sure I understand the purpose of the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, in this regard, I want to make clear that as a member of the Judicial Department, I have always understood my role to either offer housekeeping, court improvement kind of legislation, comments, but not go to the merits. And so I don't want to be viewed as taking a side, if you will, as between the department and a taxpayer, in this case, Quest. I would just offer one observation. The way the bill is drafted, I at least would be quite concerned that even if there was a motion filed by the Department of Revenue to increase value beyond what the department had pled, I would not have the ability to grant that motion because the statute says the court may not increase the value. If the amendment that's been offered says the court may not increase the value to any amount higher than the value from which the taxpayer appealed. Now, I understand the representative from Quest testimony to be that the organization offering the amendment would have intended for that finding to be permitted if a motion was filed. And I would only suggest that if that is the purpose, that this language should be wordsmithed a little to provide that the court may not increase the value except upon motion made by the department and granted. And I make that comment solely because I would not want, having appeared in front of this committee and heard and said what I've heard and said, to then face the statute and say, wait a moment, the plain wording of this statute is I may not do it. I don't care how many motions are filed. I may not do it. So if the purpose is to permit some authority to the court only after a motion is filed, then I think that amendment is necessary. Other than that, I have nothing further unless there are questions.
If I might, again, John Phillips, if I might, I did miss that. I just was handed this as I walked in, so it's the first time I've seen it. So I think the judge made a good observation in there, and that would be a problem for us if we were in a situation as he described.
Thank you. Senator Brzezinski.
Your Honor, I guess when I look at this, it just seems to me that we're basically building on an extra step that unless we have the T's crossed, the I's dotted, you can't do it. Unless there's, I mean, I can see on the bench, well, if I had a motion, then we could actually consider that. Then are you going to require that to be written or oral? And then at that point, we get to the same point. And it just seems through this judicial review and process, whatever is in contention regarding the value of the property will be vetted, plus, minus, whatever. And we're going to have a determination that it would appear, from my perspective, you should have the authority to make that based on what the evidence is without going through these extra steps, be it still within the court proceeding or pushing it back, in this case, to the department and having them reestablish this new value and then going from day going through that again, that process. I mean, I'm still having difficulty why it would be beneficial even if we made the change to the amendment upon motion whether that would be necessary. I mean, if we're going to do that, if that clarifies it, I can see that. But then the question is this limited to a motion by the department? Or because I would assume that the taxpayer is not going to be the one that's wanting to up their value of their property.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Prosnansky, I would agree with you that, and first of all, let me make clear, as I read the proposed amendment, and I don't mean this in a pejorative sense, but it does go one way. And therefore, my proposal, if to provide, frankly, the authority which I seek, it would be a one-way motion because it's a one-way amendment. But it seems to me one can either not have the amendment or have the amendment with the motion, and you would achieve the same result. I agree with you, Senator Brzezinski, though, that you would then have the step of the need to have the motion and to consider it. Again, that's not the end of the world, but it on this amendment would be also from one side.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any further questions? I would like to make a comment and then perhaps a question. Seems to me that what we would be doing with this amendment would be restricting the process beyond what it presently exists with the removal of that authority that you had prior to 1995, that we are going back to the situation you described to us that you've been working under, where you, as judge, would suggest perhaps that there should be a motion to change the valuation, a new pleading. Is that what we're looking at here, just going back to where we are, pretty much status quo, except we're by this amendment we would be going, setting up a situation where you can only go in one direction?
Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair Starr, I believe you have correctly, as I read this amendment, and again, I was provided with this just as the hearing this morning opened. And when I say that, by the way, I don't mean in any way to fault the representative from Quest. I understand the process of the legislature and sometimes the need to respond quickly. But as I read it, I would say you're exactly right. We would be, if this amendment was adopted with the addition of language permitting a change in the case of a motion, we would be putting the court back into the position it currently occupies with respect to one half of the case. As I read the amendment, the court would still be able to find a value lower than that pleaded by the taxpayer without the necessity of a motion.
Any further comments? We the committee comfortable moving ahead? Do you want a little time on this?
I think we should hold the bill.
You think we should hold the bill? Well, I think it does require some further contemplation. I personally am inclined to give the court the freedom they're asking in the original bill. I think that it certainly demands finding a fact, but I believe that enough question has been raised that we will at least allow a little time and not try to move this bill today. That's satisfactory with the committee. That's my ruling as one occupying the chair at this moment. Mm-hmm. Okay. We're going to close the public hearing. And further business of the committee. Chairman Deckard.
Thank you, Senator Starr. Just a couple of quick announcements. One is before you, and Senator George will ship it down, we have the article on Matthew Hicks, which is Barbara's son. He's getting a new rank of captain by his fiancée, Laura, and so it's just a really nice article on Barbara's son, who's done great service to our country, and commend the article to the committee from the Dallas Chronicle. Then secondly, Mr. Chair, we just on our schedule for this week, tomorrow we have a number of bills from the Department of Treasury, and we're going to revisit two of the three that we had last week from the Treasury, and here are three new bills. Then Wednesday we're going to have a paper delivered by Commissioner Beyer of the PUC on something that it's kind of been 2 years in the waiting, on the whole issue of regulated utilities and their tax status, and talking, and hopefully the committee's received the a draft of the white paper. He also, in my meeting with him last week, indicated that he will follow that up with recommendations. So we'll get the white paper on Wednesday, and then shortly thereafter should get some recommendations from the PUC and from Commissioner Beyer on that issue. And then Thursday we have Senator Metzger's incorporation bill and Tan's bill for the city of Damascus, and we'll just add a couple of bills to Thursday. That's my report.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. With that, committee is adjourned.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.